important element, is that even the devotee has, means the modes of nature will carry out the results of activities for a non-devotee. Right? She knows what to do, right? People have been going through the 8,400,000 species of life, everything so very nicely. So it's not like it's, you know, how you say, rocket science for Maya Devi to apply the modes of nature onto the living entities in the material world, right? So that is there, and that's been approved by Krishna. So therefore it can't happen without Krishna's approval. But then we have the element for the devotees that Krishna is also involved. He is also the final approving factor. But here, the difference is it's not an automatic pilot with Maya Devi. It's a matter of that the particular, consciousness that they have needs to be corrected, right? Just like we take, for example, everyone sitting here in the room, you know, that we have this particular form and we think we are that, right? That's the point. Means Prabhupada makes a point. The body is not the doctor. Right? You have somebody who they're known as a doctor. The body is not the doctor. It's the soul that's the doctor. Right? The soul thinks I am a doctor. Therefore, he has the form of a doctor. Right? He has the interests, the activities. Does this make sense? Generally, we think it's the body is that, soul something else. No, it is. The soul is thinking it's that, therefore the material energy manifests that way. Does that make sense? So it's different. That means every soul is naturally the servant of Krishna, but they identify separate then from Krishna. They think, I am this, I am that, and so many things. Therefore, the whole concept of karma is to bring out what's good and what's bad. Right? Karma is you do good activity, then the modes react favorably, and you get all favorable conditions. Right? All the different things talked about, good birth, education, wealth, beauty, these all come. Right? The modes of nature take care of it like that. So it's to correct improper mundane consciousness. Right? Improper, then you get a bad reaction. So naturally then you'll decide to do good work, then you get a good reaction. Right? Then because we're so happy in that good reaction, we forget about how reactions work. So then again we get into bad activities, we get bad reactions. Does this make sense? Okay. So now you're correcting what's right from wrong. Right? So that's why karma is there. Now, when we bring it into Krishna karma, right, and Krishna comes into the picture with the devotees, it's still the same principle. But right from wrong, right means spiritual, wrong means material. You understand? On the material platform, right means materially right, wrong means materially wrong. But on the spiritual platform, right means spiritually right, means spiritual, wrong means material. Does that make sense? So it's the same principle, right? We're trying to understand here why it appears that karma is exactly the same dealing with devotees, and why it'll come up later, why the element of karma is sometimes referred to. Devotees can say it's my karma, but at the same time it's not their karma. It's not based on karma. Reactions devotees get aren't karma, right? But at the same time, as we can say, they are karma. Right. So this is what this point being made is for. So that means then the devotee will, to distinguish right from wrong, meaning spiritual from material, therefore reactions may happen in what is favorable for Krishna's service, what's not favorable. But because the consciousness is such, I think I am the body and mind, therefore, these reactions are going to be in connection with that. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, the conditioned soul, whether they're devotee or not, They perform an activity based on conditioned nature, right? The devotee adds into it that they want to connect their conditioned nature to Krishna. Does this make sense? But the non-devotee doesn't. But still, the impetus for something is because of material conditioning. I am hungry, therefore I want to eat this, right? So whether one's a devotee or not, the hunger still comes and the conditioned reaction will come based on one's identity, right? If you're Italian, then you think, I want to eat this food. If you're American, you want to eat that food. You're Indian, you want to eat another food, right? But the point is the body needs to be fed, but by conditioned nature, you want to interact with the material energy in a particular way. Does that make sense? So, on the material platform, if that's pious, you get a good result. If it's impious, you get a bad result. And the devotee, if it's connected to Krishna, then you get a good result, meaning you advance in Krishna consciousness. If it's not for Krishna, you get a bad result, which means that there'll be some material disturbance so that one then takes shelter of Krishna. Right? Sura means one who takes shelter of Krishna when there is trouble. Right? An advanced devotee means he takes shelter of Krishna even if there's no trouble. But the neophyte means he will take shelter because there's trouble. If things are going great, then one's not remembering Krishna. Right? One has over family and friends, the interaction's going nice, the kids are being wonderful, wife's being wonderful, husband's being sensitive, it's all happening. There's no Krishna in this. It's not at all. Nothing. Zero. Zip. But as soon as then, you know, the wife is annoyed and not responding, the kids are behaving badly, this husband's insensitive, immediately then, if we're fortunate, we think of Krishna. Does this make sense? Therefore, because of attachment to these emotional needs which are conditioned, and we identify, yes, I am this, I am that, therefore then the reaction comes in the same form as it would for the materialist. But for materialists, it's simply to show this is good, this is bad on the material platform. For the devotee, it's to show the material world's bad, spiritual's good. You understand? So the medicine is the same. A devotee is sick, a non-devotee is sick, the medicine's the same. Does that make sense? But the purpose of it, the one is simply trying to create health in the body so that they can go on with their materialism and be happy. The devotee is trying to create health so they can nicely serve Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So this is why then Bhishma is explaining that it's the actions of eternal time means it's just going to happen. An activity is done, it will give a result. Right? And then Krishna's inconceivable plan, what Krishna's plan is for the devotee. Right? So here, even in the great devotees, things aren't happening to them because they're materially inclined. It's happening to them to show us how to react. Right? Such a difficult situation, Yudhishthira is still dutiful, he's still satisfied, he's still peaceful. Right? Other devotees, then it's still going on nicely. Does this make sense? Because otherwise, then we'd have a tendency to think that my situation is different. I've heard devotees say this. Oh, we're different. We're Westerners, and then we're taking up the Vedic culture. So actually, we're some unique new blend, special, you know, in the whole cosmic creation, right? It's just false ego. You know? Because I grew up in, you know, middle class, upper middle class, upstate New York family. Therefore, I am completely different as a devotee in any consideration that any of the acharyas have dealt with, you know? The process of Shraddha Prema has to be different for me because I'm born in New York. You know? Huh?
I can still use profanity.
Yeah, whatever it is. Whatever, there's something special that's there. Right? I've heard devotees discussing this, seriously. You know, how we have to come up with a new concept in culture and society and economics because we're different. Unfortunately, God already came up with it. You know? So whatever. But it's the whole point is in that we're so conditioned that we feel that we're different and it won't apply. Therefore, then the great devotees, acharyas, they come in the same situations we're in. And they take it even worse, because we could say, okay, well, they're in this situation, but, you know, the devotees, and it's not so bad. Mine's worse. That's the other thing. So therefore, then their situations that they give example are worse. Okay? You're there, your brothers have cheated you out of the business, or your inheritance, or something like this. Sound familiar? Okay. You lost a house. You lost part of a business. Did you lose being the emperor of the world and having more wealth than Indra? No. Okay, so therefore your situation isn't worse than Yudhishthira's. Therefore, Yudhishthira's reaction could be applicable to you. Does that make sense? That's why it's there. You know, all these different things happen. They all happen to the devotees. And so that's why these pastimes are there. Therefore, it's Krishna's inconceivable plan, so that everything that could happen is happening. But it's the principle, means the detail may be taken as it applies, but the principle is what's important. Right? Then we see that principle of that Yudhishthira being, you know, cheated in family affairs and losing everything, whatever is the detail, how it was done, it's not that, oh, I didn't lose my inheritance because of a gambling match, therefore Yudhishthira's example doesn't apply to me. No, the principle is he was cheated. That's going on, right? According to astrology, there are 10, according to, it means the Prashna Shastra, there are actually only 10 main situations of difficulty that people get themselves into. Right? 10 major conceptual things. Right? Something with money, or with family, or with business. I mean, it's only a few areas. These then are given detail down into 10, so you get 100. And this is what's the concept that's used by general Prashna Shastras. And then each of those 10 gets broken down into 10, then you get the Bhrigu. The point that we're making here is that the material world is just chewing the chewed. We feel it's very unique, this situation, but it's not. Right? You know what I'm saying? How is it you have a shastra that can tell you everything about yourself because your charts are in it? So that's thinking, oh, I'm so unique, my chart. No, you're so common and ordinary that there's billions of people who have your same exact chart. And so therefore, they can just write it down, right? Like you go out on Sankirtan. How many categories are people that you're going to meet? Right? You think about it. Good Sankirtan devotee could go down and list them all, tell you exactly the character, how they're going to respond, what lines you give, how they're going to take the book or not take the book. They can tell you exactly.
The 10 that you just mentioned, in each one of the sufferings they are.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like that. So it's the same way as those who know the material energy can just say that it's like this. But because of ego, we feel that we're very, very special. Therefore, we stand out. Right? You know what I'm saying? But otherwise, if it wasn't, how is it that this can be told? Bhishma Dev can tell here that it's going. Krishna can tell. Your astrologer can tell you. Your doctor can tell you. The Ayurvedic doctor takes your pulse. There's only mucus, bile, and air. He can tell you exactly what's wrong with you. Right? The astrologer can look at your chart. Even some are good. They can just look at your body, and they can tell you what the planets are. They know what's going on. So it's just over and over and over again, the same thing. But because of ego, we think we're so different, we don't notice everybody else is the same. Right? Isn't it? Something's in fashion. Right, everyone's wearing jeans that have rips in them. But everybody's wearing pants with rips in them. And each one thinks, my pants are unique. You know, because mine's got the hole, but it's still got a few threads of the fray still there. But his just is a clean hole. Mine's more refined. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's all the same thing. So that's the whole point, is that karma, it's just the same situation. It's used by Krishna to correct the devotees to make them Krishna conscious. and it's used by the material energy to keep the living entities at least behaving properly, but to ultimately frustrate them that they'll start to make come to the point of the devotees where they make the distinction between matter and spirit. Yes?
You explained about the Vipra Shastra. Does it only apply to humans, or because you have 400,000 human species? And so to say that because you have 8 million 400 types of species, it's almost 200 types of karma, then this categorization you mentioned only applies to humans.
There's categorization only for humans and only for those who are here, because only those who are here need to look at it. They're on the heaven. Huh?
Only for those who actually go to
him. Yeah, and
you
only for those who are going to go, because that's also.
He only makes predictions for people who are actually going to come, not people who are not going to come.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Means there's charts, because only under certain situations you'd come. So only those people who make the charts for. But they're just there. The point is not, because we don't want to get into a discussion on the astrology, because that's the detail. We just want to make the point that the material world is just chewing the chew. It's just over and over the same things.
And each manvantara it repeats
again. Yeah, and every manvantara it'll repeat. Sometimes there's a little slight difference. You know, it's like in the lotus stem, it'll be slightly a different color. So it has basically, I think it was come up. Maharaj was saying that in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami is making the point, every creation is exactly the same. It's got the same species of life, they do exactly the same thing. There's no difference at all. It's just,
Yeah,
it's a rerun. But somehow or another, we like it. You know, it's like I think they're still playing, what is it? You know, those ones on Lucille Ball, right?
No.
Yeah, I love Lucy. 40 years later, still going strong. So, you know, everybody likes this rerun, you know. But it says occasionally, then when all the universes come out of Mahavishnu, instead of all being the same, they're each one completely different. So it must be that there are some particular mentalities that are there in the mathematical calculation of what you can get in the combination with the modes, that now and again it completely comes up different just to take care of that. But still, the position that it comes up different, that would be, yeah. So that's the point. Manu makes that is that how God created the 8,400,000 species life in the beginning. One, they're created according to the Shastra. And two, they all, from the time of creation to the end of when, you know, Lord Vishnu inhales, they all do exactly the same thing. They don't change. Yes.
No, and also from the 400,000, really very few are really human.
Yeah. Well, it means civilized. They're all human, but they're not civilized. Because technically speaking, civilized means follows Varnashram, or accepts Varnashram. Like that. That's technically. So then, you know, like your different grades of, you know, living entities are there. So this planet specifically meant for elevating oneself. And then so many others are there. Because you have all those different humans on the different planetary systems other than, you know, means on the Earth system. You know, we're on one island, then you have the other islands. They're also human. You know, so there's a particular species of human. But it's already set their reactions. Because it's here on this planet that we perform the activities that we get the results of somewhere else. Right? Like that.
How long would it take to learn all these principles?
How long would it take to learn the
principles?
The Bhrigu Shastra. That's not so much for this.
You have to be a rishi, first of all.
Yeah.
That's a whole genre of literature that only is done by rishis, not by ordinary humans.
Yeah. So it's a special thing. But because the point is that means that, you know, the intuition and all these different things have to be highly developed. So it's not a common thing. It's not so. It means we can get by very nicely with the Jataka. Or if you have a question, you ask the question at the moment of the question. You make a chart on that time and then read it from there. So we have our methods. But otherwise, you see, Sahadev, he wrote, did Prashna Shastra like that. Bhrigu wrote. There's quite a few, you know, very... Yeah, hold on. Nadi, yeah. Right, nadi. It's the same thing. It just depends upon how general it is. Most of them are general, though from that you can read very specific if you know. And some nadis, then they only work if you are exact in the time. It means some of them, I think, down to one shastra, I think it's down to half a second. If you know that, oh no, excuse me, 3 seconds.
And a nadi amsa is a sign divided up into 150 nadi amsa, which is a portable and a utara, so 300.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like about 6 seconds of arc, something like that. Not very much.
Yeah, it's not much. If you know within that, then you can, it's very detailed. There's a story, I think it was Chanakya. And when the king's son was going to be born. That was Brahmira?
What happened was the time he was one of the Navaratnas in the court of Vikramaditya. So when the son was born, the story of how he got his name, Bharatna. So he calculated that the child would die. Certain time, certain age, certain time of day, because of a war, the king, so they make a big house, and a big castle, you know, put him on the top floor, guards on every floor, like this, and the mouse couldn't even get in. So on the day that he was supposed to die, they had a big sometimes his own. Here, so on. Go on with your predictions. He's as good as dead. And so every hour they're sending guards to see if the prince is all right. Yes, he's okay. So then, if you still want to, So then, after the time actually passed, so the guard, can he still look at it? No, he's dead already. So everybody went, and where's the prince? Oh, they were playing some games. He got a little tired. So he went out to the balcony, took a little rest. He's over there in the balcony. So they go in the balcony, there's the prince dead. Vikramaditya was a Vaishnava, and the symbol was Varaha. So all the royal symbols had the head of a boar. So the flag pole also had the head of a boar. It had fallen off, landed on his chest, he was dead. That's how the boar got the name, Varaha.
Okay, then Bhishma goes on to describe the glories and actual position of Krishna. Okay, so why is Bhishma Dev's testimony about Krishna so important for us to hear? Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verse 19. Pure devotees of the Lord are all bhavas, or a person who know the glories of the Lord in different transcendental loving service. Oh, this must be bhavas, not bhavas. Bhava means material pleasure. Bhava means spiritual. As the Lord has innumerable expansions of His plenary form, there are innumerable pure devotees of the Lord who are engaged in the exchange of service of different humors. Ordinarily, there are 12 great devotees of the Lord, namely Brahma, Narad, Shiva, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlad, Bhishma, Janaka, Sukadeva Goswami, Bala Maharaj, and Yamaraj. In verse 19, Bhishma praises Shiva, Devarshi Narad, and Kapila as Asya Anubhavam Bhagavan Veda Guhya Tamam, knowing very confidentially about the glories of the Supreme Lord. Up to this point in the Bhagavatam's narrative, we have heard from one another Mahajan, namely Narad Muni. Now Srimad Bhagavatam introduces us to a second greatly realized devotee of the Lord. Prabhupada continues. Bhishma Dev, although one of them, has mentioned only 3 important names of the 12 who know the glories of the Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the great acharyas in the modern age, explains that Anubhava, or the glory of the Lord, is first appreciated by the devotee in ecstasy, manifesting the symptoms of perspiring, trembling, weeping, bodily eruptions, etc., which are further enhanced by steady understanding of the glories of the Lord. Such different understandings of bhavas are exchanged between Yashoda and the Lord, binding the Lord by ropes. and in the chariot driving by the Lord in exchange of love with Arjuna. These glories of the Lord are exhibited in his being subordinated before his devotees, and that is another feature of the glories of the Lord. Okay, so now we're going to the point where we're introducing the element of Krishna as a person, how he interacts. This is very important. Others, as we mentioned before, the other shastras, basically, Krishna's God, Vishnu's God. That's the main thing. So it's always that awe and reverence. But now we're introducing the actual point of friendship, you know, the intimacy of friendship. Does that make sense? Where the Lord actually becomes subservient to the devotee. Right? It's just like that. It was like so not common that even when Jayadeva was writing his poem, that one of the poems came up, just the rhyme, and that came to his mind is that the Lord then placed Radharani's feet on his head. So he wrote it, but then after he's saying, this is not right, they can't, no one can put God's, you know, God won't put someone else's feet on his head. So he scratched it out, and then he went to take his bath. And then while he was taking his bath, then he came back and came in and asked the wife for the manuscript, and came and corrected it, put it back the way it was before it was scratched out, and then left again for taking the bath. Then later on, then again, he comes back from the bath, and then Jayadeva in conversation with the wife, then the wife mentions something about, you know, it's like, couldn't it have waited? You know, it was so important that you had to come back from your bath to write in these points, you know, as you must be so absorbed, you know, it must be so important. He says, I didn't come back. I just, normally I went, took my bath, and came back. I'm just coming now. He says, no, but you came before. Like that. So then, maybe, let me see. And they go to the literature and they see that it had been corrected. So it's just that he was bewildered that it could be like that. So Krishna himself just came in his form, came in and corrected it. So this element then is very important. It's being introduced here, that personal. First, Narad Muni is introducing that the essence means God consciousness, being what is favorable to God, what is his pleasure. Right? Now is being introduced the next step is that his pleasure is the interaction with his devotees. Does that make sense? The whole point, God's a person. And he has affection, he interacts, it's real. Right? It's not a bunch of stories that are very nice and very intimate and therefore it's something, you know, nice to read. That's there. But the point is he is a person. He's doing this because of affection. Does that make sense? So that's the uniqueness of the Bhagavatam that it gives that other literatures don't. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 4:17-22, Lord Krishna is quoted as saying, all the universe is filled with the conception of my majesty, but love, weakened by that sense of majesty, does not satisfy me. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love, nor can it control me. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That is my natural behavior. In whatever way my devotees surrender unto me, I reward him accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. O son of Prita, if one cherishes pure loving service, loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend or his beloved, regarding himself as great and considering me his equal or superior, I become subordinate to him. Yeah, so you see, here is the thing. So the specialness in Braj Leela, though all five rasas are there, it's starting with friendship. That's what starts to become special. Right? In Vaikuntha, there's only up to servitorship. You will have neutrality and servitorship. Right? But then with Goloka, then you start friendship is introduced. Does that make sense? And that friendship just gets more and more. So that intimacy is what is special, because Krishna is God. I remember one devotee was mentioning that he went into Prabhupada's room, offered his obeisances, and then he started, you know, Prabhupada, you're so great, you're so wonderful, you're so this, that. Prabhupada just stopped him and just said, I know who I am. You know, now what service are you supposed to be doing? You know, it's kind of like, okay, great, you know. You know, I know, so what are you going to do about it? You know, do something, you know. So Krishna knows who he is. He knows he's God. He knows everything and controls everything, and nothing moves without him. So, okay, fine. So if someone else figures that out, great. But how much taste do you get out of just being the controller of everything, right? Since we're not controlling, we may think we get a lot. But actually, once you get, if you think about it, all the people who are trying to get control never really had control. Right? You think in history, those who are going for that, you know, world domination or major domination, they never had it. You know? Or they get it short, they lose it. So therefore, there's always a thing of trying to establish it. So therefore, it seems so special. But if you have it, and that's just the way it is, just like you have domination over your finger, you know, you can move it up, you can move it sideways, you can pull it in, you know, you can grab it, you know, you can do so many things with it. You are in absolute, complete control. But does it matter? Do you even think about it? No. So, you know, if somebody comes up to you and you go, oh, you're so great, you have complete, absolute control over your finger at any time, at any place, anywhere, you know, you are the greatest, you know, kind of thinking, yeah, hello? Okay. Like that. Isn't that your mother calling you over there? You know what I'm saying? So in the same way, God, you know, being recognized as God, it's better than thinking yourself as God, right? The first stage is understanding, okay, I'm not God, he's God. That's the first stage. But if you want to get close to God, then it's, okay, he's God, you know it, okay, but now what's your relationship with him? How are you going to serve him? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the specialness now is being brought out. Because Bhishma Dev here is that he has that closeness, that intimacy, and he can appreciate it. He is appreciating Krishna's driving the chariot for Arjuna. Right? Duryodhana and the others are not. They think this is a problem. But he's appreciating because this is rasa. He's appreciating that Yudhishthira and his brothers take off their armor, take off their shoes, put down their weapon, walk across the battlefield, and take their blessings from him because of their relationship. He may be the enemy, he may be on the other side, but it doesn't mean that their relationship, if he's their grandfather and he's taken care of them, raised them and everything, doesn't remain. Does that make sense? It means Duryodhana only sees it politically. But Bhishma is appreciated because he's a Mahajan. So he appreciates Krishna and his devotees and their interactions. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a whole different thing. Yes?
Is that applied to a relationship with the spiritual master? Because in the seventh canto, Narada Muni is mentioning that relationship between disciple and spiritual master should be that of a friendship.
It's a friendship, but it's always subordinate friendship. Like that. It means friendship is there, but it's the natural thing is that the relationship with the spiritual master always has the element of servitorship in it. But within that, it may have that element. As one comes to the liberated platform, then friendship becomes the prominent element. Right, yes.
Maharaj, when you always say something clicks. When you said that neutral
yeah.
It doesn't exist in...
No, it exists, but it's not what's prominent. It exists means the neutrality and servitorship are there in Vrindavan. All the cows, the trees, the blades of grass, all the, they're all neutral. All the, and you have servants, you know, you have Raktak, you have Danishta, you have so many servants. Because but they're not what's prominent in the pastime.
You say when you know who is Krishna, you know who is God, but then what you want to do about it.
Uh-huh.
So the neutral is when you don't do nothing about it. Because Lord Chaitanya mentioned to Anupama and Rupa that the Navayogendras are neutral, that the four Kumaras are neutral. So maybe they know about Krishna, but they just preach about it, but they don't establish the relationship.
Yeah, like that. They appreciate. In other words, it's appreciation. It's nice, just like, let's say, you do something. You lead a kirtan and everybody's appreciating it. You know, it has a feeling to it, but it's not that close. You know, in other words, you're going to smile and that, and you're going to go, nice kirtan, oh, thank you, and this and that, that was great. Or, it's nice, it's an interaction, but you're really going to share that niceness of the kirtan with those who are close, a close friend. Oh yeah, this was good, that was good, that was nice. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be more... So the neutrality has interaction, but it doesn't go more than just appreciation. That's the thing. It's just appreciation, yes.
Well, let me admit, our sampradaya, who is in Dasya, within Madhurajana is Dasya, the Manjaris, that they are very prominent?
Well, it depends what you mean. But the point is that Lord Chaitanya, because he's taken the mood of Radharani, our relationship with Lord Chaitanya is always in Dasya. You don't have another relationship than that with Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, it's always Dasya. You know. The point is that. But it's not neutrality. Servitorship there means it's subordinate. That's with Radharani, but not with Krishna. They have a conjugal relationship with Krishna, but they have a servitorship relationship with Radharani. But that's how they access the conjugal with Krishna. You understand? Krishna, yeah, okay. Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavatam 1.19.19 continues, 1.9.19. Sukadeva Goswami and the Kumaras, although situated in the transcendental position, became converted by another feature of bhava and turned into pure devotees of the Lord. This kind of bhava throws the mumukshavas, persons desiring liberation, to the lotus feet of the Lord. It has already been mentioned in the Bhagavatam, see verse 1.2.26 and purport, Bhagavatam 1.9.19. Bhagavatam 1.9.19 now tells of a third kind of bhava. Quote, tribulations imposed upon the devotees by the Lord constitute another exchange of transcendental bhava between the Lord and the devotees. The Lord says, quote, I put my devotee into difficulty, and thus the devotee becomes more purified in exchanging transcendental bhava with me. Unquote. Or end of Krishna's quote. Placing the devotee into material troubles necessitates delivering him from the illusory material relationships. The material relations are based on reciprocation of material enjoyment, which depends mainly on material resources. Therefore, when material resources are withdrawn by the Lord, the devotee is 100% attracted towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Thus, the Lord snatches the fallen soul from the mire of material existence. Tribulations offered by the Lord to his devotees are different from the tribulations resulting from vicious actions. Right. So this is what we're discussing before. In other words, here he's making the point is that material endeavor is based on the happiness you get. That will be based on relationships you'll experience. That is based on the material facility. Right? That's why there's so much endeavor. The more you want to get into material life, the more to get more facility. Right? You want to have interaction with the family, you need a home. Right? Shiva's the only one that we know of successful family life. He has nothing. Right? The only place that his wife can safely sit down and say, this is mine, is on his lap. You know, other than that, he does sit regularly under a tree, but it's, you know what I'm saying? But otherwise, you get the home, and then it needs this, and it needs that, and all that is to create. If you think about it, everything you have in your house is all there for interactions with people, which will give you a experience of happiness. If you think about it, everything in the house is based on that. You know, if you go through and ask, why do you have this, it'll all go back to what it does in a relationship. Right? So, therefore, Krishna takes away the material facility. Because if you take that away, then the whole material system is thwarted. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why those who have no possessions, right?
No attachment.
Yeah, no attachment. What is it? Kinshana gochara. There's no material possession. It means they may have facility, but they see it as Krishna's, like Sudama Vipra. He had more wealth and opulence than Indra, but he saw it as Krishna's. So he's still a Kinshana gochara. But if we think it's ours, then, you know, even the pauper promises, probably his penny, he's got his little penny and he's proud of what he's going to do with his penny. You know? Like that. So that's different from what comes from improper. Here he says vicious action. Vicious means envy, because it's enviousness of Krishna's position. We want to be the controller. Therefore, others are standing in the way because they also think they're God. So it's a whole chivalry between, you know, the various gods on the, you know, the 6 billion gods on the planet. You know, that's just the human ones. Then you got to throw in the animals, right? You know, because they sometimes get in the way. So therefore, ultimately, it's vicious because it's based on envy. Like that. But, yeah. Queen Kunti exhibited this bhava when she offered Lord Krishna her prayer of Bhagavatam 1.8.25. Srila Prabhupada finishes his purport to 1.9.19. All these glories of the Lord are especially known to the great Mahajanas, like Brahma, Shiva, Narad, Kapila, Kumara, and Bhishma, as mentioned above, and one is able to grasp it by their grace. So this is an important thing. I think it's not Shrotiya. You know that? There's another word that means gentleman. Mano uses it, in, I think, in the 12th chapter. Shrauta is using throughout. That means a Brahmin who is initiated into the Shrauta Yajnas and all these other Yajnas. It also starts with an S. No, not Snatika. There's another one. Because Snatika means you graduated. This is specifically means that you know the scriptures and you are follow them, practice them. I can't remember. It starts with an S. No. Yeah. No, it's not a... No, because it's not with the Shrotya. Oh, well, whatever. So, in there, Mana defines that this class of persons are those who can take the esoteric aspects of the scriptures and make them directly perceivable to the audience. Right? This is the definition of that personality. You know what I'm saying? Because for us, we read it, maybe esoteric, maybe it's nice knowledge, but we're not able to grasp it, because when it says it's perceivable by the senses means you can directly understand it and apply it in your life. So that's very special. Right? So we see here then, Prabhupada's referring to these personalities as such having that quality. Right? Because one is able to grasp it by their grace. They are able to explain it in ways that then you can understand it and then use it in your life. So that's most important. Because theory is nice, but you still have to be able to apply it. Right? The theory has to go together with activity. The two can't be separated. Chit potency means the knowledge and the activity are combined. Right? So for us, that means buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga means it's actually the complete manifestation of chit. Right? Otherwise, we're performing activity, which is karma. Or we have knowledge, which is jnana. But they're separated. But when the two are combined, then that's the proper. So, does that make sense? So that common, to be able to combine it and apply it means it comes from knowledge from these persons. Because when they give it with the application that you can use it in your life. Right? So that's another. So realization also then is being brought out here. Note, it appears that Bhishma himself was in the Mumukshava Bhava evidence. He mentions only Narad, Shiva, and Kapila, great sages all, as Mahajanas. In verse 20, he tells Yudhishthira that he has been thinking of Krishna as his maternal cousin, dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, and so on, out of ignorance only. And as Srila Prabhupada revealed in a letter dated 67-12-29, Bhishma was ordinarily a worshipper of Lord Vishnu, the giver of liberation, although he knew Krishna to be non-different. In verse 23, he prays for Muchyate Kama Karma Bihi, liberation from all fruit of activities. And in verse 24, he visualizes the Lord, who stood before him with two hands, as being four-armed. Yet he expressed great appreciation for the Lord's friendship with Arjuna, 33-38, which moved Krishna to defend his friend from Bhishma's determined attack. Okay, so then also the thing element here is this Mumuksha Bhava doesn't mean that he's not a devotee. It just means that their concentration will be more on getting out of the material world than getting into the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? Because many times we'll be having difficulties or different things and we just want to be able to, you know, get rid of material consciousness and dealing with the material energy, and that becomes the main focus. So that's okay in that it's an inspiration to get out, but the main point is, where are you going? Right? That makes the devotee. That's the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. The non-devotee just wants to get out. The devotee wants to get out but get into the spiritual world. Right? So if his focus is just on pleasing Krishna, then he doesn't worry about that. That comes aside anyway. Right? Just like with Dharma, you get Artha automatically. So in the same way with Bhakti, automatically comes liberation. Right? This doesn't have to be separately endeavored for. So the process of bhakti contains that, but our focus may be on it because of you know, the contemplations of the material energy, you know, based on observations given in the Gita, you know, watching the modes of nature, the divine, the demoniac, all these different elements, how the metaphysics of how the material energy works. So sometimes that has a tendency to throw it more into getting out than in, because performing an activity with knowledge frees one from material entanglement. Right? Does that make sense? It means knowledge means what's given by the Shastra. It means real knowledge, Vedanta. It means performing an activity with the viewpoint of Vedanta, it will free you from material entanglement. Right? It doesn't mean that, you know, getting into the car and you know how to drive the car, therefore now that's jnana and karma combined, therefore I'm freeing. No, it means Vedanta, because knowledge means that. Okay? So therefore he's a worshipper of Vishnu, but then the element is getting out, because we see that the worshippers of Vishnu tend towards liberation. Right? It's still liberation is a major factor for them, but that doesn't mean they're not great devotees, it's just a liberation that is element here, element there. But the Bhagavatam will bring us beyond that, where liberation isn't what's important. Right? That's not the important.
Okay, then continuing here.
Bhishma appreciates that Krishna has personally come to be present before him at the time of his death. Sutta mentions that Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Bhishmadev about the essential principles of various religious duties. 23-25. Note, in verse 25, the specifics of Yudhishthira's questions are omitted. Therefore, this guide does not count it as a question under study. Bhishmadev first answers Yudhishthira's questions regarding the duties of a religious monarch, and then notices that the auspicious time for his departure has arrived. He thus withdraws his consciousness from the world and focuses it on Krishna. Note, Bhishmadev's answers to Yudhishthira's question are mentioned by Sutta Goswami in brief summary. Elaboration is found in Srila Prabhupada's purports to these verses. Bhishma especially fixes his mind on remembering Krishna as he saw him on the battlefield as the chariot driver of Arjuna, verse 34-38. Bhishma further glorifies Krishna's wonderful reciprocations with his other devotees, 39-42. Note, in verse 40, he expresses his transcendental appreciation for the conjugal affection shared between Lord Krishna and the gopis of Braja. So it's important to understand that just as those who are devotees of Braja And specifically then following in the footsteps of the gopis, that they appreciate the other pastimes of the Lord, you know, in Dwarka or in Ayodhya or in Vaikuntha. They also appreciate that because it's rasa. In other words, they're rasiks. Rasik means they taste rasa. Of rasik, then they may have their favorite. Right? Anybody who's a connoisseur in everything can appreciate all elements of something that's proper. Within that, they'll have their particular favorite. You understand? This idea that rasik or a connoisseur means only the thing that he likes, he can taste that and he can't appreciate anything else. We wouldn't call them a connoisseur. We'd call them an enthusiast. Right? Does that make sense? There's a very major difference between the spiritual concept of rasik and the kind of like the intellectual concept of rasik. Right? So, in the inverse, the devotees of Vaikuntha are very happy to hear about and they appreciate the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. Does this make sense? But they still is, oh, my Lord is so great, he does all these wonderful, sweet pastimes. It's another part of his greatness, it's another opulence. Right? Does that make sense? So that's all. Because beauty is sweet. So therefore, it's another element of his beauty. It's another opulence. So it goes both ways. So just like they can, otherwise you say, well, why is he mentioning the gopis? This, no, they can appreciate. Narad Muni, he's in servitor ras, but he can tell you all about Braja and the Leela and everything and appreciate it very much. Or he can go to Dwarka and appreciate, you know, the queens of Dwarka and him playing, Krishna's playing with his children and doing all these things, and he has his friends, Uddhava. That's his rasa. That's how he likes to see the Lord. But he appreciates all the other rasas. Yes?
You know, it's like when they went to Kurukshetra, there was the Braja vasas there, the Dwarka vasas there, and they all appreciate each other.
So it's natural. A rasik means he is able to appreciate rasa like that. Does that make sense? And specifically here, we're talking about bhava, which means spiritual rasa, not bhava, which means material rasa. Right? Does that make sense?
It appears that Bhishma Deva and Kumaras, four Kumaras, they are atmarams. And then means like self-sufficient, self-satisfied persons. But in the same time, they appreciate different levels of bhakti. Then I have a question. How this principle of Atmarama is applied in loving relationship between devotees? This is Krishna.
Okay. You could hear? He's saying about Atmarama is how, what is the application of Atmarama in with the devotees? Let's just give it very short and then because it's time to end. Atmarama just means satisfied in the self on the Brahman platform. Right. So, but the devotee, Brahman, the Bhagavan platform is also a transcendental platform. So they're satisfied in that platform of Bhagavan realization. Like that. The four Kumaras is specifically, they were Brahmavadis, but it doesn't say that Bhishma is specifically a Brahmavadi. He's a worshipper of Vishnu, but his main focus is getting out of the material world. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So there's a slight difference. So he's in servitorship, while the Kumaras are in neutrality. Right? So there is some difference in there. But we can see as he is appreciating all these other elements of rasa. He's appreciating the friendship, he's appreciating Mother Jashoda, he's appreciating the gopis. Like that. It's very much able to be appreciated. You know, just like you hear a story about someone else and their relations, you appreciate it. Right? But you have your own relationships, right? You hear how, you know, that this person is doing this with his friend and that, and it's very nice, you can appreciate it. And you can appreciate the fine points of it and the interactions, but you have your friends that you enact that with. Does that make sense? So therefore, as everybody in their realm, they have their specific relationship with Krishna in which they interact on that platform of rasa. But at the same time, they can appreciate everybody else on their platform of rasa with Krishna. That makes sense?
This Atmarama is like someone maybe wants liberation, but the devotee don't have time for liberation.
Yeah.
He also don't want to enjoy himself in any platform, even if he's Atmarama, he's busy serving.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah, basically. Because Atmarama just means that you're satisfied, you're absorbed in the platform of Atma. So for the devotee, Atma means Krishna. Mm-hmm. You know, for the impersonalist, Atma just means themselves. Like that. So that's why there's so many definitions of Atmarama. There's so many different ways it can be approached.
Atmarama.
Yeah, like that.
So that means Atmarama Shloka describes actually devotees.
Atmarama describes everything. Because the impersonalists, you can only take away. Atmarama is someone who's satisfied with their body, you know, or satisfied with the mind. But these are small, but that's not major. The major is the various aspects of devotees. That's the real Atmarama. That'll come up when it comes to the verse. Okay, so we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainita Gaura Parivananti.